When I first came to London in the early 1970s, there was an incredibly thriving classical music scene. It was as if the normal jigsaw pieces of musical life had been thrown up in the air, and, reflecting the spirit of the times, the conventional repertory was being expanded in many different directions. Pierre Boulez was conducting the BBC Symphony Orchestra and taking them out of normal concert halls for new music events at the Roundhouse. Young audiences were drawn to unconventional music, new and old. And there was a change, too, in the nature of the revival of early music from before the 18th century. There wasn't just an interest in early repertory from the Baroque performed on the instruments of our time. There was a rapid growth in the popularity of very early music performed on modern copies of original instruments. In the London of the early 70s, for the first time, there were concerts of music from the Middle Ages and Renaissance that attracted large enthusiastic audiences. There was a recently formed group called the Early Music Consort, led by a firebrand wind instrument player called David Munro, which was creating huge enthusiasm. So one thing I wanted to establish in the research I've been doing in the BBC's archives at Caversham on the corporation's role in the early music revival is how the BBC helped to make this happen. The BBC has always been quite cautious in picking up new trends in musical performance and has waited for artists to make their mark first in the outside world. Yet in the case of David Munro, the BBC response to his work was startling, immediate and enthusiastic. He was based in Birmingham, playing at the Royal Shakespeare Theatre in Stratford, and like so many other artists, Munro wrote into the BBC in November 1966 asking to be employed. And almost before the BBC in London could write back expressing their interest, I found Munro in 1967 already making recordings for the BBC in the Midlands. Munro had a natural talent, but also great professionalism and sophistication. What he could do with a solo recorder was pretty amazing. The late 60s were a time of rapid transition from early music as a fascinating but specialist interest to early music as popular entertainment. And the BBC was involved in both areas. In the first came the concerts of the ensemble called Musica Reservata, a group guided by a quirky director, Michael Morrow, with hard-hitting textures and uncompromising vocal sounds. David Munro made several broadcasts and some recordings with that ensemble, but I think he quickly decided that its edgy approach was not attractive or approachable enough for him. He decided instead to work with the more ingratiating sound of the countertenor James Bowman, who quickly became a key member of Munro's early music consort. If there was one word which distinguished David Munro from those around him at the time in the early music world, it was professionalism. Munro, with the help of his wife Gillian Reed, was brilliantly well organised at putting programmes of early music together and performing them in a way that appealed to broad audiences. They veered across the centuries and had titles like Music of the Royal Courts of Europe 1150 to 1520, Kings and Queens across the ages, and so on. They were fun, they were wittily presented, even if they often involved compromises in historical style. Munro was expert at getting people to play for him in a disciplined fashion. Unlike with some other groups of the early 70s that I remember well, there weren't endless pauses on stage for tuning and rearranging the musicians. It all worked seamlessly, and this made it extremely attractive to the BBC. Even hard-bitten music critics who didn't know a whole lot about the repertory lapped up the experience. The critic of the Financial Times reported in January 1971 on a concert which she said had one of the most slickly presented programmes of medieval and Renaissance music. Brilliant, bouncy performances. The extent to which they were historically accurate was somewhat secondary. As the consort's marketing said at the time, it was formed to give authentic and uninhibited performances. the seemingly inexhaustible Munro was getting involved in other BBC programming, which made him extremely visible. He was soon contributing music to Radio 4's dramatisation of The Hobbit, and then in 1970 he compiled and wrote some music for BBC TV's famous series The Six Wives of Henry VIII, and then its successor Elizabeth R. All these things thrust Munro into the limelight. David Munro's close associate in the early music consort, with whom he often gave smaller duet concerts, was the harpsichordist Christopher Hogwood. They'd met at Cambridge in the early 60s. Hogwood was broad in his interests and wide in his musical sympathies, arguably more of a natural scholar than Munro. In 1969, Hogwood was asked to present an existing programme on the BBC called The Young Idea, taking requests from the under-20s. And he established himself as the regular host of that programme for many years, mixing music new and old in imaginative contrasts. Then, as the BBC archives show, there was interest in 1971 from those in charge of the newly renamed Radio 3 in creating a programme specially for young children. David Munro's name was suggested to the BBC as a presenter, and there began the remarkable series called Pied Piper, of which he presented an amazing 655 programmes with a unique blend of enthusiasm and information before his untimely death in 1976, which was such a tragedy. Pied Piper may have been originally intended for children, but it was heard by all listeners to Radio 3, including me, and it became an iconic programme. Here he is explaining to everyone about the medieval musician Guillaume Dufay.
Although we don't know much about Dufay's life compared to that of later composers, we do actually know more about what he did than of almost any other medieval musician. This is largely because a number of pieces which he wrote were for very special occasions, famous events of the time which have gone down in history anyway. Here's part of a grand motet which Dufay wrote in 1433. It was in honour of the peace treaty of Viterbo, signed between Pope Eugene IV and King Sigismund.
Both Pied Piper and Christopher Hogwood's The Young Idea, I think, mark a crucial moment in the BBC's absorption of early music into the mainstream of broadcasting. These pioneers integrated the earlier repertory into their wide-ranging music programmes and made it sound entirely natural. At the same time, performance was moving very rapidly because of the emergence of a new generation of players. These were violinists, cellists, flautists, oboists, with growing skills in playing original instruments with techniques derived from the practices of the 18th century and before. In 1973, Hogwood formed his ensemble, the Academy of Ancient Music. It was a pretty risky move at the time, when the playing was not always totally reliable, but with the major support of the Decca Record Company and the enthusiasm of the BBC, stylish results were achieved. This is the Academy of Ancient Music, playing a symphony by the 18th century English composer Thomas Arne. The BBC archives show how quickly period-style performance took off in the 1970s. As well as Hogwood's Academy of Ancient Music, 1973 saw the foundation of the Taverner Choir and Consort, directed by the scholar and conductor Andrew Parrott. Their eclectic repertory ranged from the medieval mass setting by Guillaume de Machaut to the Renaissance splendour of the music for the wedding celebrations in Florence of 1589, which Radio 3 broadcast around Europe at the end of the 1970s. Quite an event. In the early 70s, there was also the English Concert, directed by harpsichordist Trevor Pinnock. In earlier Renaissance repertory, there were a series of thoughtfully planned BBC programmes by the Consort of Music, under its director, lutenist Anthony Rooley. Gradually, these period instrument groups came to be used in broadcasting with ever greater regularity. Critics started to choose them as first choices in Radio 3's Building a Library series of recommended recordings. As a result, the pioneers in bringing the Baroque repertory to the radio airwaves in the 1950s and 60s tended to be replaced in the enthusiasms of BBC producers and listeners by these newer ensembles, causing some resentment. By now, the harpsichordist Christopher Hogwood had become a leading conductor and had a plan to move forward in time and record all the Mozart symphonies with the period instruments of the Academy of Ancient Music. Surprisingly, when they appeared, they raced into the music charts alongside the megastars like Pavarotti. There was a freshness and transparency about period-style performance which won many fans, and it was only later that questions began to be asked about the whole idea of faithfulness to the past. The BBC supported the need for preparation, research and rehearsal time in early music. Hogwood devised a series for Radio 3 called the Trio Sonata, which enabled the preparation of no fewer than 15 programmes. And when his ensemble came to the proms with Handel's Water Music in 1978 and then A Famous Messiah in 1979 with huge success, it seemed that the cause of early music played on period instruments had been won. To me, the end of the 1970s marks a high watermark in its popular acceptance. Even with all the controversy around historical performance that was to come, on one thing it's possible to agree. It was the exposure that the BBC gave to all these ensembles, old and new, that inspired so much growth in activity around early music and provided a bedrock of support. Michael Morrow, the director of Musica Reservata, put the matter very clearly for his generation, referring to the third programme's broadcast. He said, "Without this musical background, neither Musica Reservata nor indeed any other English professional early music ensemble could have come into being." Quite a statement. So by 1980, in our British concert life, recording life, and especially in our broadcasting life, early music was here to stay. Radio 3 began its own regular magazine programme called Early Music Forum from 1980, and a creative group of producers, including Nicholas Anderson, Clive Bennett and Hugh Keat, constantly promoted early music on the network. And at this point, well, I can't help noticing that a young journalist by the name of Nicholas Kenyon crops up in the archive of these programmes. So, in the interests of objectivity, I think I should leave the story there.